If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group,
or if you've had experience with manipulation or abuse of power that you'd like to share,
leave us a message on our hotline number at 347-86-TRUST.
That's 347-868-7878.
Or shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers, don't. Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two teen maniacs who've actually experienced it. I'm Lola Blanc.
And I'm Megan Elizabeth.
And today our guest is Luis Favela. He's a musician who attended the Christian Training Camp for Youth Honor Academy, which was part of an evangelical youth organization called Teen Mania Ministries. We'll talk about his religious upbringing as a youth leader, how he agreed to attend Honor Academy to appease his parents after some turbulent teen years, and the daily routine once he arrived that included multiple weeks of military-style boot camp.
We'll also discuss Gauntlet Weekend, which was basically Hunger Games for Christians, the psychological and physical stress that they were forced to endure, all in the name of Jesus, and how cat food factored in.
I'm really curious to know how many of our listeners attended camps like this, because I know we have a lot of people who feel that their Christian upbringings or youth organizations were cults. So if you guys went to Honor Academy or something related to Teen Mania Ministries, definitely let us know. Very curious. Before we get into it, notice I still have the sexy voice.
Yeah, I love it. I'm still here for it.
Thank you. This is just how I sound now, I guess. Before we get into it,
yes.
What is your cultiest thing this week?
Well, mine's a memory because the conversation that we had today, I never went to Teen Mania, unfortunately. I probably really would have loved it, but I did go to Young Life. Do you remember Young Life?
Oh my gosh, yes. Jack went to Young Life, I think. Yeah.
Really? Okay, mm-hmm. So I remember sneaking out of the house to go to Young Life because my parents would have lost their minds. I've said so on the podcast before, but like my parents, to them, their specific brand of Christianity is like, you can be friends with people who are family are complete atheists, but you can't be friends with like Young Life kind of Christian
families.
Oh, that's
families. So funny.
Yeah, who like love Christmas. Like my parents didn't let us celebrate Christmas because they said it was rude to Jesus, that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
So Young Life was an absolute like sacrilegious experience. And I just remember going and being like, so, I don't know, overwhelmed. And my cultiest thing of the week was just this memory of like trying to lift my hands up for like a split second, you know, how everybody else was, to like catch the spirit, and then being embarrassed and putting them down. Being like, I can't do this.
I actually don't know what this, you catch the spirit by putting your hands
like
up.
Yeah, you know, you've seen it, right?
I mean, I guess generally I've seen Christian services where they're like, praise Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So I thought I could like, I was like, I'm going to test it out because my friend Hillary was all into it. And then I was like, it's not for me. It's not for me. I shied out of it right quick.
It's the same with so many religions. I feel like I want to say there's like some Muslim ideology like this. There's some Mormon or FLDS ideology like this, where the person who's similar to you but has some differences is worse than the person who like is fully a non-believer, which
right.
has never really made sense to me. I'm like,
right.
you have more in common with the former rather than the latter.
I guess the theory is that they know the correct way and they're still doing it wrong. So
right.
they're like
they're
extra evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am so evil for leaving Mormonism intentionally.
So that was mine. What about you? What's your cultiest thing of the week?
I think I'm just going to talk about this clip that's viral on Twitter today, which is basically comparing a clip from Don't Look Up. I don't know if you guys seen this movie, but you know, it's a very hitting you over the head with a metaphor about how we are currently viewing climate change or dealing with climate change as a society. But it's got a clip with Jennifer Lawrence on a show with Leonardo DiCaprio, and they're like, the world is literally ending. Why are you like, why are we pretending this isn't happening? And the newscaster's just like, hee hee, let's keep it light. We like to keep it light on this show. Followed by an actual clip of a UK news show where there's a meteorologist on and he's like, yeah, the weather's fine today, but seriously, people are going to die. Because
next week it's going to be so hot that people are going to die.
It's going to be record levels of heat. People will die. We don't have the infrastructure for this. Like, this is deadly and dangerous. And the newscaster is literally like, well, we shouldn't. Why are meteorologists all being so serious about this weather thing?
I think you have to do it in the British accent, too, because it makes it so much crazy.
Why are meteorologists always being so serious about this weather
thing? You're being so grumpy. Meteorologists are so grumpy right now.
Like, what's the big deal? It was hot once in 1975. And he's like, yeah, there was one heat wave one day in the 70s. We are telling you that there are more extreme and more frequent heat waves continuing to happen. It is getting worse. People are going to die. And they're like, whoa, chill out, bro.
Yeah, they're like, it's the summer and you're ruining our buzz. Which, let's face it, he was. I'm just kidding.
It's so funny, though. I just like, why the... I mean, I've talked about it before, and I don't need to go off on a rant right now, but just the fact that people don't believe scientists when they are all saying the same thing is so fascinating to me. And it's like, I know it's uncomfortable to face a reality that terrifying, that the climate is changing in a very urgent and dangerous way, that like, if it doesn't require action, we're fucked. I know that that's like a lot to wrap your head around. So I get why it's easier to cling to the belief that it's not man-made and this is just normal and like it's not a big deal and the libs are overblowing it. Like it feels more comfortable to live in that reality. But damn, at a certain point, like everyone is making it up. Like you really think every scientist, except for like the two guys who are paid by oil companies, yeah, is making it up? Like, nah, brah. It is such a weird time because I feel like, I mean, I've been retweeting tweets about this. I feel like I have this keen sense right now that like everything is apocalyptic, mm-hmm. and we're just supposed to go about our lives and like be normal and like not be in a constant state of anxiety, and finding that balance and compartmentalizing but also trying to take action has just been really tricky for me.
Yeah, same. I mean, yeah, you have to know that this is serious and also be able to be a human.
I'm not good at that.
I don't think we're supposed to be.
Yeah. I'm going to join Extinction Rebellion because I'm officially aging out of Sunrise Movement in 6 months because you have to be under 35.
Amazing. Thanks, Sunrise.
Fuck you, youth movement.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I'm going to try some other shit. I feel like I can't. The anxiety will not go away unless I do something. So yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
Fight.
Anyway, cultish mentality about the climate. That's my point, guys. I swear it's culty. I swear my culty things are culty.
That is culty. People saying it's not true, that's a cult.
legitimately, yes. And it's a cult, by the way, that has been marketed and purchased by Republicans since the 70s and the Exxon Corporation. So we don't, we're all just being manipulated.
Wee!
Why do I laugh like this now? God damn it.
Listen, I hope the executives are having a really great summer. I hope that they're on their yachts and that they're having the time of their lives. And I think that that's what really matters. They need some good vacays. If it means all of our lives, they better be having some fun. While the rest of us swelter
in hell. I hope it's worth it for these 78-year-olds who are dying in 2 years and leaving this world to us. All righty, guys. Let's talk about Honor Academy, shall we?
Let's do it.
Welcome, Luis Favela, my boyfriend's brother-in-law.
Hello.
To the show.
Hola, ladies.
Hola. Your wife has been talking about your story to me for a while now, so I'm excited to actually hear everything that went down. Let's start from the beginning. What religion were you growing up?
My family grew up Catholic, my dad. But I think since the age of three, like, I think they converted into probably Protestant. More like.
Mm.
And it was like a pretty Protestant evangelistic or Pentecostal kind of very charismatic, very religious, strict household.
Did you believe in various religions that you were a part of?
So I guess when you're a kid, you just kind of like roll with it.
Yeah.
You know, your parents, you're like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. This is like the lifestyle. Or, you know, you're part of this community. You see other kids. You start going to church. I think it was pretty normal between ages 3 and 5. And then it got pretty intense because I was really into music. Like since I've been a kid, like I've always been like playing stuff or, you know, super drawn to like music, dancing. Mostly when I was a kid, I was really into singing. Now I'm kind of like more bashful. I'm like, I don't really like to do that. I think it's probably because of the, you know, all the things that happened when I was a kid. But anyways, when I was a kid, I started Yeah, I was being part of like the kids service, and I started doing like singing like special songs. They started training me to be like a little worship leader at age 5.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, basically from the ages of like 5 to 10, I was like leading worship services.
Oh, my God. In my
mind, it was just like reciting and memorizing all this content that I look back into, like, you know, all these songs, all these scriptures, and like opening, basically like opening, you know, services up like with a scripture and then like singing a set of like 30 minutes. Just me. And there's video of this, like home videos. And every time I go back home, like my parents played it and stuff. So that was my experience growing up as a kid.
You were a little leader in your church from such a young age, and you were just kind of going along with it, though. Did you have like really strong faith or anything?
I guess when I was a little kid, I want to say, yes, I had strong faith. Everything that I saw and everything that manifested itself was in front of me. And I was like, I guess it's truth. You know, if my parents are doing, I see these communities, my, you know, friends in church that were small too, their parents were doing it. So
totally. I mean, it's your community. It's your lifestyle. Yeah.
And everybody, well, I got to say, I grew up, I'm from Oxnard, California. And the community there, you know, it's mostly Mexican or, you know, Hispanic, Chicano community. So everybody, that's when I was little, I was like, everybody, it's like me, you know, it's like my brothers, sisters, everybody looks like me. I guess we're doing the right thing.
Right. You
know, I feel like I was part of a community and I felt really comfortable doing it. I did notice that obviously not a lot of kids, I felt special, you know, you're like, oh, I get to lead worship. I get to play. It was mostly actually between the ages 5 and 8, I was mostly singing.
Mm.
And then I was really always interested in playing, but the band director, his kid was the keyboard player, and I was really drawn into keys always, and I just knew I didn't kind of have a chance playing, so I just kind of stuck to vocals for the moment. So yeah, growing up, I've always been like kind of skeptical about everything, questioning everything, obviously even my parents. So I got to an age that I was like a debater and always questioning their, you know, the way they disciplined me and showing those hints of like, I guess like my parents would be like, oh, you're a rebel, like we got to get the demons out of you,
right?
So that's why they made me read more scripture, memorize more, you know, song work, worship songs.
Literal demons? Would they really think that there were demons?
I think they were just kind of saying it. No, I think they were just like influences. That's probably like the word. You're just being influenced by the worldly, or I don't know if you heard that term, world.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's all my parents said.
Same,
that's worldly music. That's worldly stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say I never was like 100% in. I don't know what that means. Sometimes I'm like, what does it mean to be 100% in? You know, I felt like in the moment I was trying to do what I could. And like, you know, I was like, well, I feel pretty comfortable and I like what I'm doing and it seems right. So
yeah, there's no reason at that age to be like, this is wrong necessarily. I think Megan had that experience, but I do think that's a more rare child take on their parents' religion. Okay, so when did you first hear about the Honor Academy?
So the Honor Academy, basically my teenage years, I rebelled. I went into like a rebel mode and I didn't want to do anything really with like religion or church, but I wanted to appease my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I had like that, you know, relationship. I'm like, and in school I was like failing. I was doing really poorly. I was like, hey, you're not bad influence, but I was just not really doing the academic world. So my parents were really frustrated. And they're like, what are we going to do? You know, our kid that we're like, our little saint that we instructed in the word, like he now he's like rebelled. I was like playing for punk bands. So I think the worship, or like the worship director and a couple of like the youth group leaders went to this internship / academy. It was like a school, basically. And they told my parents, they're like, hey, it has a music program. We know Luis is really passionate. And it's accredited by, you know, this institution. So I know he's not doing really good in like school right now. Maybe this is an opportunity, you know, to him get back on track. And obviously the foundation of it is like super religious. It's Christian. It's like Christian boot camp or like basically like worship military school or kind of like that. I didn't really wanted to go, but at the same time, I did feel like stuck. I wanted to like kind of find success in music, and the thing that they said accredited, you know, I was like, oh, maybe I could learn some theory or like some music stuff that I don't really know.
Mm.
Plus they said like, you know, you'd be playing in worship teams, which I grew up all my life playing worship music. That's basically what I grew up playing as well as I developed through the years. You know, first as a lead singer or, you know, singer, and then like more into like piano and like other instruments. But yeah, just like the foundation of like hymns, different kind of music genres. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll learn something new. Obviously, they kind of pitched it as like it's a school, college. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll meet more cool people like me. I was like, there has to be, you know, people that are into the same kind of music, the same kind of stuff that I am.
So how old were you?
So I was about to be 21.
Okay.
So I was pretty old. Yeah. It wasn't like right off of high school. Like I said, I had a pretty bad experience with school. I ended up getting kicked out from high school, and I had to like go get like a GED and stuff like that just because it was bad. All I wanted to do was play in like a rock band and yeah, just two.
I mean, I get it.
So imagine that, like going from like super structural, like, oh, my parents religious, to like now my kid is just wearing black and, you know, listening to freaking screaming music. And yeah, he's definitely falling off. Not going to school, just hanging out, just going to backyard shows and stuff like that. So.
Right.
So I went there because I wanted to appease my family as well. And I just want to kind of like build a relationship with my parents.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And then, like I said, in the back of my mind, it wasn't that like I knew where I was going, but also it was financially, my parents have paid up front for it. So they were kind of like sending me to, you know, a school.
They were like working to send you to this place.
Yeah, and I was like plain excited. I was like, oh, I'm excited. But I was like, man, Luis, this is it. Like, you didn't graduate. Like, if I could only finish this. Maybe I would be able to like, you know, please, or, you know, be like my parents. Oh, he finally like did something. He got an accreditation or, you know, like a diploma. But we kind of find out this place doesn't really give any certifications or anything like that.
So is it presented as like a college?
It's presented as a college. And I think they lost their accreditation. They were accredited by the school called Oral Roberts. So you could take like English classes and stuff. They were like mostly online.
Okay.
Through them. Like you're taking online courses, but you're in like in the premises. And so.
Did you say they were accredited by something called Oral Roberts?
Like this is like the school.
Which, it's just such a funny
name. I think it's
like
a school in the South. Like, I don't know if it's like. The only reason is because we, Alyssa and I were watching the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And I saw the basketball team and it said Oral Roberts. And I, in my mind, it was like this like. 16 seed, like, no, they're playing like the, and I was like, I know that name.
Whew.
Oral Roberts. And so they're like, it's a university in this. I was like, yes. I was like, the academy I went to, their accreditation was through that school. And we went, did some research as like a conservative, like kind of like, you know, university, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, it makes sense. It's like Christian and stuff.
Right. It looks like Oral Roberts was a televangelist. And I guess then he started a university.
Yeah.
That's such a poor name. I just, Oral Roberts, and I love it.
He got into the wrong industry.
He really did. When I was watching videos of this last night, which I did till 5 a.m., if anybody wants to check out where you went, it is fascinating endlessly. At first I was like, oh, is this where like maybe bad kids go? But then it was like, no, I think this is where the really serious kids go. So is it a little mixture of both? But they're like torturing the good kids, like they're in boot camp.
It's a little bit of both, yes. And you have to fill out an application and everything. And obviously on the application, it says like, you know, do you have a relationship with God? Like all this. And of course, I grew up, I was like, yes, I could name, like, you know, the Old Testament, New Testament, prophets. What do you want? At the same time, like I told you, when I was filming this, I was excited because it was like the first time I'm like, okay, where I really like, now maybe this, like, have an opportunity to, like, go back and, like, finish something.
Yeah, I'd be excited. I'd be so excited.
You know, I've got rejected. I just got kicked out of high school. Now they told me I need to go to adult school and, like, finish. So I was like, oh, it's, like, a sense of, like, oh, I'm getting accepted. I'm going to, like, college.
It's all coming together.
This is what my parents, you know. And my parents, yep. I'm going to say, I'm just going to drop. My parents are Mexican. They immigrated to the States in, you know, the 80s. So to them, I don't know if you, culturally, like, that's one of the biggest things. If you see your kids going to college, they come here for a better opportunity.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, wow. So to me, it was like the pressure. I'm firstborn as well. So it was like the pressure of like, man, maybe I could save save the family image and like, you know, I went to some sort of academy. So,
oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Definitely. And once my parents told me, they're like, yeah, we put money up front. Then it was like, okay, I know this is serious because it's not like we just had money to blow. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, like I have to commit. Like right. I want my parents' money to go somewhere. You know,
and how long of a program was it?
It was a year, but there was extensions. You could stay up to 3 years, I think. Two to three years. And it was crazy. Everything, I don't know if you did like some research, but like the program, it's basically self-run by students, by undergrads. Like undergrads work the grounds and like the campus, everything from call centers, logistically, everything is run basically.
It's like camp counselors a little bit is what it seemed like
to me. That's what it felt like, yeah.
And have you heard, I don't know if you guys are, have you heard like YWAM, Mercy Ships, all these like like organizations. And it was like, they had like different programs, but everything was called Teen Mania Ministries, which was run by Ron Luce.
Okay.
He's like is he the lunatic with the thing that he's yelling through all the time?
Yeah, is
the horn.
That actually is Dave Haas, which he was president or like the chancellor, you would call him, of the academy.
So the Honor Academy is underneath this larger umbrella of Teen Mania Ministries.
Yes. And okay. Teen Mania Ministries has their school, which is the academy. And they also run like, it used to be called Acquire the Fire. I don't know if you, or Winter Jam. Have you heard of like that? Where they bring all these artists and it's like a huge like 3-day thing for like teens.
Is it connected to like Young Life? That's what everybody in Kansas did. Young Life.
Young Life. I don't know if it's connected, but maybe like, you know,
Okay.
But, I think it's like, a
Young
similar.
Life encourages these young teenagers. We used to run like all these basically 3-day events where there's like speakers, there's bands. You know, I remember back in the day, they got, I think it was like POD because POD like got to play in the early days, like, you know.
I feel so alive.
Yeah. Yeah, Youth of the Nation, like, you know. So when they started getting like these artists that had like a pool. I don't know if you heard of the Newsboys and all that, like just Christian kind of like contemporary artists. They started.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another organization called Global Expeditions, which was all their mission work. So they had all these connections over like 20 different countries. And they're like, basically would, the students are like, yeah, like the interns, we would call all these like churches and their youth, especially I would say we'd focus on like big churches with like kids with money and be like, hey, do you want to go change the world? Do you want to go, you know, to Africa or Mexico or, you know, and then you're going to, obviously they had connections there, you know, with obviously Christian leaders there. And then they would take them to these communities. They would do outreach or Bible study or what we call it, vacation Bible school. And you would run these programs with like missionaries and interns. And then obviously staff members that would go and facilitate the whole thing too as well.
So is the Honor Academy training people who are then going to go be missionaries in the other program?
Basically, yes.
I noticed they were calling them interns in the videos. Is that what they called the students?
The students, yes.
Okay, they were interns. All right.
Once I learned that when I got there, I thought I was a student. And then once I got to the place, I remember we got like there in buses. They took us to middle of nowhere, east of Dallas. It's called Garden Valley, this small town, like middle of nowhere. And there's these gates and like it's like, you know, it's like a campus. You're like, wow, like dorms, cafeteria, a bunch of like, you know, and it looks like a college campus and you're just like, oh, basketball courts, volleyball courts, pool. You're like, oh, okay. You get off the bus, you go to your dorm, and then the first weekend, it's called like Gauntlet, and it's basically like they're trying to brainwash you. And you do sign a contract kind of saying like, hey, I know. And then I remember that intern. This is an internship. And I read it and I was like, accredited school, blah, 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 internship. So when I saw that, I was like, I'm here to work. That's the first thing that clicked in my mind. I'm like, I'm going to work.
Right.
I'm going to exchange my work for something. Like, what am I going to do? So basically, they put you on these ministry placements. And I remember you have to go through these tests for like the first weekend. Like, they want to see your skill sets, you know. And like, I wanted to be in the call center because I met some cool guys. Like, I was like, oh, we bond over music, blah, blah, blah. No, I ended up going to kitchen crew, cafeteria.
So you're paying to go work in a kitchen?
Yes.
For free.
And I thought I was enrolling in a music program. So,
and can you say a little bit more about the Gauntlet weekend?
Yeah. So that weekend, it's like a 3-day weekend, and you're like in these like basically meetings or sessions about a bunch of like, you know, the worldly things, the Christian spiritual world, like what you're going to go through, like the process of the internship. This whole year is going to like shape basically your character, the way you are, you know, become an adult, or yeah, you carry yourself for the rest of your life.
Are there any like intense emotional activities that they would do to like,
yes,
take you on a journey?
Yes. Yeah, so I remember this is at the end, like of all this, they're like, and I think it was like the same kind of sermon. They're like, for the cross, you know, you got to give it all. You got to bring all your, you know, everything that God doesn't want. And like, you have to like confess. So it was like basically like a confession session of like confessing everything you've done. Like you could, it's a clean slate from here on. Like if you broke rules, obviously there's a bunch of red flags, no alcohol, that you couldn't be in a relationship going into the program. Like there was no dating.
Even as a 20-year-old, you couldn't be in a relationship.
And that's that's the thing that was pretty crazy. I was one of the oldest ones. I feel like they mostly triggered like 18-year-olds, like after high school, they don't know where they're going. Like that transition period of like, I'm not going to college.
Right.
I think I want to take a year off. So they would send, those are like the kids they want, that they don't know what they want to do with it, like especially in like that transition period. And then they're like, oh, perfect. But obviously you have like a back, like a Christian background as well. You know, they're
right,
I don't know if college is for me, but I still want to be like in a ministry. I still want to serve the Lord, blah, blah, blah. You know, I still want to like do something.
A young person at the exact time in their life where they're looking for identity and looking for like some kind of structure or direction for their life. That's like the most vulnerable part of the population.
Do you think that they were getting those confessions from you to use it against you? Kind of a Scientology type of a thing? Like now they know all your secrets?
And I think so, because yeah, like you were confessing, like, I'm gonna be honest with you. Like they're like, you know, especially with Christian, this is like a very strict environment. I've struggled with sexuality, like questions like that. Like, are you active? Like, are you looking at porn or pornography? Are you engaged in a sexual relationship? Are you doing drugs? Like stuff. So you were like writing stuff down. I remember this is one of the things I want to make clear. Like, I've always been like on the fence of things. So going into this was like, I know why I'm here. My parents paid for it. I want to, you know, amend the relationship with my parents. And I was just like, I'm going to click the boxes and I'm going to try to navigate as, you know, this whole year.
I'm gonna do as this right. As I can,
and just get this diploma, go back home and get my parents off my back for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yes, I actually did. I was just like pretty honest. I was like, yeah, you know, the weekend before or 2 weekends before going to the internship, I went to Vegas for my 21st birthday party. So like basically I remember I met with this dorm director where you're doing the application, you're assigning, and he's like, man, have you been struggling? And I was like, basically I was like, everything in this list, like, you know, I've done. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, no worries, this weekend you're gonna like amend the relationship with God. And I remember the biggest thing about that weekend, so at the end of this whole thing, they had like this huge bonfire. And they told everybody to go get whatever possessions or secrets or like banties or, you know, if they brought weed or anything and throw it into the fire, and it was going to be like a clean slate. And I remember I went back to my dorm and my dorm director went with me, and I had like a Nirvana t-shirt I had.
And damn.
He's like, grab it. So I grabbed it. And I put it on like on a trash bag, and I just put it under my bed. I was like, there's no way I'm throwing these t-shirts away. Like, no. I was like, you know, I remember like I was a big like Nine Inch Nails fan, and then I had like the CD, and I was like, well, yep, it's going in this trash bag. I'm like, I'm throwing it away, but not really.
Nice.
So yeah.
Way to preserve your sense of self and not let them like immediately strip all of the things about you away, you know?
Yeah. So throughout the whole weekend, it was like we were supposed to carry ourselves in a different way. And you got to remember, I'm a I'm a teenager from LA. I grew up in a, you know, Spanish, English speaking. So my, it was like slang everywhere. And people were like, what? Right. And it was like crass words. They would call it crass words. Like I was going to say, I was using foul language. I would drop the, you know, the F bomb. Like they would, and they would like come up to me, like these dorm directors and like these other interns that were really serious about God. And they're like, they would confront me and they're like, hey man, like the way you're carrying it, the way you're speaking it, it's not correct. And I was like, what do you say? And I was, and they're like, you just said something. And I'd be like, damn, what did I say? And they're like, you just said it. And I was like, damn, damn's a better word. I was like, what are you talking about? So it was like a wow. It was like you said, there was like really intense kids. Like they were in it for, they were like, we were called to be like, you know, the salt of the earth. And they were really into this. Like, we're going to change the world. And then as the internship went on, I started identifying people that were kind of like in the same place that their parents kind of sent them here because they were like kind of fuck ups or, you know, and those are right. The people I started really like clicking. And basically we just kind of became a core and we kind of navigated the whole throughout the whole system, you know, or through right. the whole experience.
Thank God.
Yeah. I'm glad there were people that you could connect with there at all. I feel like,
Without that,
would have been so horrible.
Like I said, I grew up in two cultures, Mexican American. So just assimilating like this, I'm going to speak English here, or like it's safe to, you know, bring, you know, Spanglish into this. Because there was also one of the things that I was like, wow. It was the first time I met people from different denominations because there was like Catholics, there was Mormons, there was Christians.
Really?
There was like, yeah, so non-denominational or like, and then there was like, yeah, there was like different kinds. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Because I grew up in like a super Pentecostal kind of charismatic. And then there was Baptists. So it was like the first time I started like, so what's your faith? And they were like, tell me this. And in my mind, I never wanted to like offend anybody or like, this is what I believe. I would just kind of roll with it. Like, you know, I'd be like, oh, okay. I was like, well, I'm kind of like non-denominational, but I was really Pentecostal. And I would just kind of like navigate conversations and be like, oh, why align with that belief as well? You know, because people were like intense. They would talk about rapture and like, you know, like the book of Revelation and like all this stuff. And I was like, wow. Like, I heard that, but this is, like, next level.
In terms of leadership, so you have the, like, your fellow peers, basically, who are leading everything. But who's above them? Like, who's telling them what to do?
Ramos was the president of the whole Teen Mania Ministries. Dave Haas was under the Honor Academy, the school. So, basically. And there was, like, Heath Stoner, which was, like, probably another guy under Dave Haas. It was probably like, let's say vice president or something like that. And then there was like the second and third years were staff members. And they were like dorm directors, you know, they were like administrative, like people on top of or head of like the calling center, head of like, you know, the grounds and maintenance or head of like the global expedition ops and stuff. So it was a very complex.
How many people were there? Like 10,000, 5,000, 2,000, 200?
Each class, I think our class was probably around 750
interns.
Okay. And then there's probably, I'm going to say like 200 to 300 staff members.
Oh, wow. So, okay. It's a little city.
And like I said, yeah, the second and third years would become staff members. So once you went through the first year and they saw that, man, this guy has like really good, you know, skill sets. Or things that he could, we see good leadership skills, good, you know. So there would be like, hey, do you want to extend a second year? And then once you stayed, you don't pay as an intern. They actually pay you like a stipend kind of.
I was going to ask. Okay. So, all right.
And they give you like a food allowance and stuff. And like.
Okay.
And yeah, you're basically working for the internship, you know, 40, 50, you're a full-time employee. And you live there on campus because they own. So this place, I forget. So when you go in, it's like these gates. And it's a lot of land. I'm going to say it's like over 400 and something acres of land.
And it's like woodsy, right? Like very I was woodsy, watching some yeah, videos. Like, it's like lots of trees.
Lots of trees. The pathway, like right away, you see like the dorms, the cafeteria, like a chapel. But then you keep going in and there's like other buildings like ground maintenance. There's like a workout building. And then there's like they would host or they would do like a camp of extreme camp events for like church, different churches. And they had like little campsites up there as well. And then like they had two obstacle courses, military. I think you could see in a couple of the videos. I don't know how they got them, but they were like straight up from like the Marines, like old equipment.
Oh my God.
And like it was like Navy SEALs kind of like obstacle courses. And those were like really like you had to go like 1 mile or 2 miles into campus to see these places there. And then there was like man constructed lakes and stuff. It was really, it was like crazy because I remember that first weekend as well as like going through all these like basically like sessions of like they're just like counting you with like what's gonna go, like what are you gonna go through, like you have to leave all, you know, they're turning new slate, leave all like your old behind, we're gonna instruct you, we're gonna equip you, there's gonna be like character development classes, all this stuff. Then I remember after that weekend we started, they would wake us up at 6 a.m. and in a period of 6 weeks, 7 weeks, it was physical stuff. Like they would wake us up at 6 a.m. like in our dorm, like we had like, you know, our dorm director wake us up and we would go run like 2 to 3 miles every day, every morning. And that was like the beginning of our, and then I was like, man, like that's when I was like, is this like military school? Like, what is going on? Like, I remember calling my parents and I was like, I need to get out of here. And they're like, what do you mean? You're going to go through it? And I was like, I don't think, I was like, I haven't taken one music class and I've been here for 4 days and I haven't seen an instrument. I haven't seen a piano. I haven't seen a music room. I was like, it's just like straight. I was like, it's different. I was like, this is not what they put on, you know, like the website, like telling you like the options or, you know, like the curriculum or whatever. And I was like, my parents, I was like, no, you go through it. You know, they're like, we already paid some money. Like, you got this. Like, you know, just being super encouraging. And I was like, okay. So I was just basically,
So a typical day, at least maybe in the beginning, a typical day is you wake up at six, they send you on a run. And then like, what else? Is there more physical training?
Yes. You do like push-ups. You start doing like, obviously, like, you know, you start like stretching, like some yoga poses. And like all this is being directed by Dave Haas, that guy. He had like a little like tower. And then you would go to like these basketball.
He had a tower?
Like a little made up like wooden kind of, not tower, but like stage. But he was, it was like basically he was like on top of that. And he had like
the
cell phone or like microphone. And he's like, come on, everybody. And they would play music. And they're
terrifying.
I'm trying to remember what's the word for that training. Because everybody knew it. So these 5 weeks, but they told you, they're like, we're going to shape you to be like in the best shape mentally, physically, you know, so you could be aware for the next year of like, you know, shaping of your experience here in the Honor Academy. And then they started introducing this term called LTEs, life transforming events, which is like crucial. That is like one word that I'll never forget. And they start. So ESO is one of the things that you see. I don't know. We're like the military, like super military. It's like 3-4 days. EASOL, emotionally strengthening opportunity of a lifetime. So ESO, they're
amazing.
Like, we're prepping for ESO. It's going to be in 6 weeks. So yeah, we had the structure. Like you said, wake up at 6 a.m, do physical work, push-ups, you know, jumping jacks, run 2-3 miles. And then we would go eat breakfast. And then we would have courses. We would have like character development, like, you know, like Bible study, blah, blah, blah. And then you would go into your work placement, which mine was cafeteria, others people's grounds and maintenance, other people were guards, other people call center stuff. So everybody was like, and you would work for 6 to 7 hours.
Damn.
So I was in the cafeteria. I was taking 2 to 3 classes every day, and then I would work in the cafeteria. And it was like basically dinner crew. I would prep dinner. And
did they ever have you do any music?
So this is where it goes. They did. And it was the second semester. To me, it seemed like they were testing me because I wanted to be like, so during these sessions, they have like these amazing bands. You're like, man, who the heck? It's like Hillsong. I don't know if you heard like Hillsong United, like all these worship teams and lights. Like they have these people that they look like rock stars. And I was like, well, that's what I came to be. That's where I want to be in the school, because I want to be in the tech side. Like I was like, at least let me do lights or something. Like, and So they are like, yeah, the music program doesn't start till later after ESOL. That's what they kept saying, you know, and you'll start taking music classes. And I was like, when is ESOL going to happen? And they're like, oh, it's like 5 to 6 weeks. So I eventually did end up joining a band because you had to like audition too. It wasn't like, oh, I'm musically. They're like, okay, give us your background audition. And I walked in into the music room, and that was like 6 months later. And I auditioned. They're like, can you play the song? Yes. Can you sing? Yes. But I was like, I don't really want to sing. I'm here for playing music. So eventually I ended up joining they had like many, like 4 or 5 different worship teams. And then you would be on rotation. And throughout the whole year, like chapel meetings or like different, you know, events, like I said, we would host camps at the end of the year, like in the summer, because I joined there in August. So July and basically beginning of August, there was like camps for all these different churches, like teen groups, and you would lead worship sessions with them. And yeah, or you would go work at different churches and like you would go play. They'd be like, oh, we have this worship team. Go lead worship Sunday morning for this church, you know, but we wouldn't see a penny of it. I don't know if we got like, obviously if Teen Mania was getting paid for us to offer.
Oh, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were.
I love that they named it Teen Mania because they're like, we're the most manic assholes alive. You guys are gonna go insane.
We're going to make you crazy.
So yeah, and I wonder how, like, that's the thing. I don't know if you saw like the news. ESOL was probably like the biggest. It was like the most. I'm gonna say, now that I look back, I was just talking to my wife Alyssa. And I was like, man, it was like emotionally scarring, like physically, like trauma. That definitely, now that I'm, this is the first time I'm like actually bringing it up and talking to you guys. Obviously, you guys are the experts,
oh,
have
thank
the questions.
You. Yeah,
so
thank you.
It's like going through like, okay. But yeah, so they prep you to do this physical, it's like, yeah, like an emotional, I don't know, experience, but it's a traumatic experience. And basically, I forget to mention, you would put into companies, like military, very military, like Michigan, Alabama company, and you would have a number, and you would train every morning with it, and you would do your exercise, like I said, and you would train with your company, which was like your core group, and then we had like, so there was dorms, but it was like split, like, you know, it was like women on one dorm and men, so it wasn't like co-ed, like, it was divided.
Of course, yeah.
It was very divided. We had a classes for like character. We also had classes for, it was called Trailer for Men. And it was very gender role classes. Like what it means to be like a man in like marriage, how to lead your wife or kind of stuff like that. Like, how are you?
Oh, God.
So very like, like obviously now I look back on it and you're like, yeah, they were enforcing like gender, you know. And obviously like scripture, I could be like the man is the head of the household. I don't know if you heard like that term, you know.
Of course.
You got to lead by example. You got to lead your family, your wife, blah, blah, blah. So all of this was being introduced. And it wasn't the first time I heard it. Like, obviously, I grew up with like, you know, going to church and I would hear that from the pulpit or going to weddings, just even being a teen. I remember like they'd be like, you would submit to your husband and like,
blah, yeah, blah, obey blah, your husband.
Stuff
yeah.
like that. So it was like, well, yeah, I didn't really get the concept. I think now that I go back and I'm like, wow, yeah, this is... Well, yeah, there were classes
that's messed
like
up,
that.
Yeah.
Like, basically developing your character to be a godly man. That's what they would call it. Like. And women,
right.
like, women had their own classes, how to be, like, a good serving wife, probably. I didn't really...
Oh,
I bet
sure.
they did.
Yeah.
I
oh,
bet
God.
They did.
On the surface, it seems like, oh, great, you get to get in shape and for a few weeks, and then you get to do the thing you came to do and, like, learn work ethic. But, like, obviously, there's so much more going on, and I want to talk about some of the stuff, specifically some of the stuff that we saw in, like, the training. I guess this was from the training period. Like, did you have to eat the cat food? Did you have to do any of that stuff?
Oh, yeah. So we
Is
ate,
that
like,
an ESOL?
Yeah, that was ESOL.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, let's get into it. Because like, that's probably the craziest. That's where it becomes, like, what is going on? I remember, so they trained. We trained. And then, like, we started doing, like, these obstacle courses. And then... Food was very limited. Like, it was a price. If you complete this obstacle course, if you do this thing, we're going to give you food, right? So
right.
after doing the whatever they wanted you to do. So, for instance, you see a video of them, people carrying crosses, the actual wooden crosses. So we would have to walk with a cross for like 3 miles and carry it. And
like, how big of a cross?
It was probably like, I'm going to say like 7-8 feet. wide. Whoa. Like, and it was like, you know, 2x4 is like, you're like carrying a thing. And whoa. I'm like 130 pounds. So it's probably like half my. And I'm like carrying it. But obviously you feel pressure. You're like, dude, I'm leading my company. Like we have women in our company. Like, so these sister corps that you're training with in like the morning, you've been training for 5 weeks. And they're like, yes, you're going to go through all these obstacles as well. But all these staff members as well, I remember they would use, like you said, when you confessed everything or like the things that you struggle with, you know, if you did complete that questionnaire, which I didn't really, like I was just very vaguely like filling
you
out.
You were like, what is porn?
They would use that to break you down psychologically. Like literally, right. I remember one time, one of like a good friend, and I'm going to be honest, like, he was struggling. Obviously, he grew up in a very conservative, you know, household. But I remember when I met him, he was very, like, he pretty much, he's like, hey, man, I'm, like, gay. But he didn't really say. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I was like, I wasn't, that's the thing. I've always questioned. And growing up, I'm going to say, growing up in California, I have family members, friends that I grew up with. And I was accepting. I always challenged that against, like, the favor of my family. I would always get into debates about judging people for who they are. I remember with my dad. So
oh,
I remember
you're so cool.
One of the things they made him do is, and I just do because I remember having conversations with him because I was like, I'm from California. He's like, I'm from Maryland and I have a lot of friends. And I remember he kind of said, he's like, you know, I was dating this person, but he didn't say the name. And I just kind of like put it together. Well, they made him wear a dress for 3 days carrying a cross.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
so in my mind, that image kind of was like, what is going on? Like they're trying to humiliate, like, you know,
yeah.
And he would lead in front of like our company and he would carry the cross with a dress on.
Oh, my gosh.
And obviously during that whole thing at the end, he's like, you know, I was delivered, blah, 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 from things that I didn't, you know, he even said it like, you know, I was struggling with like my sexuality, blah, blah, blah. But in my mind, like, that's one of the things that I remember was, like, in that moment, I was like, that's not right. And yeah. I don't know, like, I didn't know how to put it or who to talk to because I was still, you're 5 weeks in and you're like, I'm going to be here for a year. Who are my friends? Like, I don't want to say something that somebody's going to report it. And they're super strict about, like, the rules. Like, so you can't drink. You like I said, no relationships, no secular music. Like, it was very strict. If not, you get expelled from the internship. And in my mind, I was like, I can't get expelled. My parents paid money for this. Like, I can't just throw the money away. So, yeah, during those, like I said, ESO, it was just like things like that. They would make you go get wet and sandy if you couldn't recite like Bible verses or things that you had to like know, like scripture. I remember like during those 5 weeks in class and that like if you didn't know it, you would go to like these volleyball courts and they would drench them like with water and you would have to roll and then like do like push-ups and get back in the company. And that was like kind of like your punishment. And then you see like people going under like, you know, like wood, not like bar. I don't think it was like barbed wire, but it was like obstacle courses stuff. They had us carry our sister corps on canoes and there was like this man-made lake. They make you kind of like walk through the lake holding, you know, your sister corps on top. And then they're like, basically telling you like this is like you're gonna lead, like be strong man, like, you know, there's gonna be, you know, circumstances in life that you have to, you know, man up and like blah blah blah, you know, lead by example. And like obviously this is like emotional and physical trauma like going on, but when I was going through it, I'm gonna go back, you gotta understand as well, like I grew up in a pretty rough community. Like I grew up in like gangs, I'm going to say, and I grew up in a very like Hispanic community and like the church where I saw families being broken up by our government system, like, you know, like ICE raiding our church, stuff like that, like kind of happened. And like our church is like fundraising or like, oh, offering, we're going to bring, you know, Fulanito X person, I want to say his name, or, you know, back from Mexico. We're going to buy him his like coyote trip or coyote. I don't know if you heard that term. Like the person that's going to smuggle him in. It's $2,000. Right. So the church would come together and like pay the friggin' amount.
Wow.
And we would, you know, pay for him to be back with his family. So me growing up with these things as well, I feel like I knew it was wrong, like I said. But I was like, man, it was that kind of game. Like I started getting into like a game mentality. I was like, I just need to survive this. So I'm going through this easel experience and just like, you know, trying to survive. And I'm going to say nothing of this was forced on us. It wasn't. I remember they're like, there was this bell that you, if you don't want to be part of it, you could just ring out the bell. But there was, it was like a shameful act. Like you, the bell was like placed in the middle of the whole camp. And like, you know, you have all these companies and you would have to walk up there and like ring the bell. And that means like you rung out, like you quit.
Well, also, I heard some girl say, you know, if you ring the bell, I wanted to ring the bell, but that's giving up on Jesus. So
yes.
I did. So like,
you're a sinner, yeah, if you ring the bell.
You don't appreciate Jesus if you ring the bell, but yeah, you can ring it. Yeah. Go ahead.
So yeah, imagine you're like carrying your sister core like on this canoe, two, three, you know, young women. And you just like... I'm going to drop the canoe. Like you're just like, I can't let my team down. So you have like this physical pressure as well. And emotionally, and then they're drilling you and and the whole core of this is like, you know, you do it for Jesus. Don't, this is like what's going to shape you. This is like the transforming event that's going to lead you to have a stronger, I felt like a stronger relationship, a better quiet. I don't know if you heard the quiet time, like the Lord is going to talk to you. So that was like, ESO was probably like the most physical, like I said, it was very traumatic and like they would humiliate people, you know, definitely. And they were
losers.
Military, yeah, like boot camp, like they were talked down, they're trying to scream. And like, I'm like, to me, like I said, I would just kind of ignore them. And it sucks because I didn't really trust anybody in my company. Like I said, it was like 4 or 5 weeks and I was like, who are these people? At the end of the year, obviously, by the time I started, I was like, well, these people, like, we kind of knew, I knew who my circle was. I was like, I wish I could have done them with them because this was, we would have just, like, laughed at them. You know, we would have been like, oh, this, what are you trying to do? Like, trying to break us down? But there was another event called World Awareness. And this is, well, this one was pretty crazy, too, I remember. So in a weekend, we were basically told, we're going to split the class, which was, like, you know, 600-700, you know, students. And every weekend, so the weekends was like our off time. We didn't really do ministry placement. We didn't really work or have classes or whatever. But this is where the life transforming events went on. And ESO was on the weekend, like I said. And then this other one called World Awareness. So you're missionaries. And then the staff people, which was like 200-300 people, are basically the government. And they're persecuting the missionaries. So they're like, we're going to let you loose. They would lock the dorms. And you're not allowed back on your dorms. And you're going to be loose.
Oh, my God.
And you're going to be persecuted in the woods for basically 48 hours.
Whoa.
And these people had, like, paintball guns, the staff members. And, well, you got to, you know, when you're, like, 18, you're like, is this a game? Or, like, what? You know, you're like, nobody's doing this.
Oh, my God.
And for me,
it's like the purge.
Exactly. By that time, I think it was like 6 months into the program. And like, I built like a pretty strong, like, relationship. So to me, like, we had like a team. We're like, well, we're just gonna, you know, we're just gonna go do our, cause some trouble in the woods. And then they would hide rice and beans, cans, like food for us, the own government. And we would have to find it and like survive. Like, literally, I remember being like in the woods, like, under some rocks for like 2 hours, like in the middle of the night, because they were chasing us.
Oh my God. So it's not like the purge, it's like Hunger Games
or
something.
It's basically like Hunger Games, yeah.
Whoa. So, like, so they don't feed you, so you literally have to just find your food.
Yes.
And escape from
the government, which is the staff members. And then the whole thing, like, there was a debriefing process, like, after the World Awareness, after ESO, and they would talk about what you just went through. And how to, like, emotionally, like, basically go through it. How to, like, decompress and, like, how to do it. So, basically, they're like, this is what actual missionaries go through in, like, third world countries, you know? They're being killed. They're being they're martyrs for the gospel. And then in my mind, I'm like, no, this is insane. Like, basically, I went
with it.
Yeah,
pretty sure they have shelter.
Oh, in my mind, I'm like, you know, I was like, there's no other time I'm going to be able to experience this. Also, going back to culturally, I was like, this is probably nothing with, like, you know, members of my community or friends or uncles went through when, you know, being persecuted. And I'm going to be honest, like, if when they crossed the border or they came to this country.
Right.
So in my mind, I'm like, I remember just telling myself, I'm like, I could do this. This is not real. Like, I could always just, like, walk away and be like, I don't want to be part of this. What are they going to do? we had like four or five really good friends, like guys and like girls. We just kind of went through it and we're like, man, we're like some teenagers and they're chasing us in the woods with like paintball guns. And like, we just have to survive. It was before Hunger Games, but like the whole concept was just like crazy, wild. We're like, man, this is crazy.
You had to just sleep wherever you could sleep? Sleep wherever, yes.
And they would chase you. Like, there was cars. And like, I'm telling you, this place was like wooded. And then there was like obstacle courses. So we kind of had a map drawn because we've been living there for like 4 to 5 months already when they did this specific event. So we would just hide. We were like, let's go to the obstacle courses. Like, there's probably nobody there. And we would chill. And as soon as we would see guards or like people in trucks, we're like, oh, the government's here. And once they got you,
so scary.
Once they got you, they would take you to these prison camps. Like, and literally it was like, you know, the shower rooms or like the gym. And they would have you there doing like physical push-ups, jumping jacks, kind of like resembling like, oh, this is what like actual, but they're not hurting you, but they're making you do physical stuff, you know, like burpees, stuff like that. Like standing on one leg. And to, you know, you got like 18, 19 year olds. People are like kind of laugh, like, what is this? Like, what are you trying to do to me?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, this whole thing, it was just like, what? Like in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, what am I going through? Where did my parents say? And I would call them.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my parents when I came for winter break, what really was going on. I started noticing that I was like, well, now I'm making them feel, I felt bad because now they just, you know, spent whatever savings they had and they put it into this. And now I don't want to make them feel bad and be like, you're just wasting your money. So at some point, I just was like going through the motions, you know.
Damn.
I was just like, you know, it's changing me. I'm, you know, I'm meeting people. And then, like I said, in the second part of the semester or the second semester after winter break, you know, the holidays, I started playing music. And then once I started playing music and like, but I felt like it was like an auditioning the whole time. They put me in like kitchen crew serving, you know, all these basically interns or students, 700 people. We would prep dinner for them. We would serve them. I would clean dishes. Well, actually, I got put in cleaning duty because, you know, when you go to like a cafeteria diner, you have a diner and people are like serving you food and you go through the line. And I remember, I tell this story all the time because I was just like a rebel. Like, I just didn't want to comply against like any, like, I was just like always against everything. But I remember that time, like, it was like the first 3 weeks I got put in kitchen crew and I was like really upset. I was bothered. And these girls were like complaining about shepherd's pie. We made shepherd's pie. It looked disgusting. I was like, you either have shepherd's pie or PB&J. What do you want me to make you? Like, what do you want me to? Mm-hmm. And these girls were like, ew, this is disgusting. And they pushed the plate. I put it on top of the guy. They pushed the plate and it almost like fell on me. So I was like, really? I was just like mad. And I just acted like I remember grabbing the plate and like slamming it. And I remember my supervisor was like, Luis. And like she complained, obviously. She's like, Luis just like, you know, did this. And I was put like, basically they punished me and I was put like in the dish room cleaning dishes for 6 months. So I wasn't able to be on the front line in the cafeteria or cleaning in the cafeteria. I was in dish room for 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
Just Jesus everybody's Christ. Dishes. Jeez.
And it was just because I was like, man, well, she doesn't have to give me attitude and push, like, basically push the plate against me. I didn't make this. I'm just serving you. Like, and she was just giving me attitude. And I was just like, yeah, I just kind of responded in the moment. But it was very, like, different situations like that I would kind of, like, just flip. And I look back on it and I was, like, thinking, I was like, maybe it was just like an emotional reaction of like all the trauma or everything that was going on. I remember just flipping out a couple like times on people. Just like they would, you know, they said something and maybe they didn't even mean it or something. And I would just like flip out or like just curse them out. Be like, you know, and they'd be like, whoa, where did that come from, dude? And I was like, I'm just like, I don't know.
You're like, I have no idea. Yeah, weird. I seem to be a little angry.
I want to go back to the food thing really fast. Some of the videos that we saw involved, there was like everyone would have to sit and eat cat food and they would say to the kids, Like, first of all, they'd be yelling, "Here, kitty, kitty," while they're eating it. And they would say to the kids, "If you throw up, you have to then eat that. So you'd better not throw up." And meanwhile, everyone's gagging. Like, the kids are gagging. And
it was like cat food mixed with oysters, mixed with sardines, mixed with spam.
Oh, my God,
spam.
It was?
Yes.
Ew, I didn't realize it was that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so they tricked us. I remember, well, mine, we didn't have that. Because I remember looking at some footages. They grab footages from different classes, different years. And each year, I think each year it started being less and less physical, less and less like edgy, because they were probably getting like, you know, maybe
threats
exactly of shutting down. I'm going to say my year was 2009 to 2010. The internship after the school, the Honor Academy, only survived like another, I'm going to say, 2 to 3 years before it was like fully shut down. And it was financially based. I think something happened financially, like they weren't making payments for property, or like everything just started coming down. I remember like looking into it a little bit. But once I left that place, I want nothing to do. Like, it was like a shutdown. Like, that year didn't really happen. Unless I remember meeting people that mentioned different words, and I was like, how do you know about this place? And then ended up being like, oh, my cousin went to that internship, or my cousin went there and she told me about it. And then I would open up and be like, oh yeah, this and this, like, yeah, it was crazy. And I would just share my story, and or it'd be people, it'd be like, man, you went to that? Yes, I went in there. And then, but yeah, most of the time it was like a closed chapter book with my family. I was like, yeah, I went to go do music. I brought the diploma. It says Honor Academy certificate, you know. And I was like, here it is, Mom. This is it. You paid, you know, I think it was around $10,000, I'm going to say.
Oh, my.
Because they got to put, like, classes, lodging, food, all that. You know, you're living there for a year.
Right.
But, yeah, we basically, in my mind, I'm like, so you basically paid them plus the $10,000 for me to go work that year.
Yep.
And
be tortured.
Make that place run.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Wow.
Right. Wow.
So yeah, it was a crazy experience. There was also the mission trips. I was sent to Mexico, Tijuana, and it was in the month of June. And they're like, Luis, well, you're bilingual Spanish, and you said your mom's from Tijuana. Do you know the area? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, we think you could be a good leader in the operations team to run the whole camp. There's going to be kids coming, and they're going to be on this mission trip for a month, and they're going to go build homes in Baja California, Tijuana, and we want you to run, basically be one of the main translators for the operation. So you're going to go with, like, Joe Day. I remember that was like the guy who's basically in charge of the whole camp. And you're going to go to, like, the market, because you speak really fluent, you know, slang, but go to market, buy amounts of food for these missionaries. And, like, you know, just all the logistical stuff. You're going to do the interchanging, like, with the money. So I went there, and I remember we had these bands of equipment. They had, like, buses, because they had, like, these whole, like, I'm telling you, like, buses, because they used to do, like, ATF, like, events, winter jams. So they had all these lighting, stage, everything. So we took a little bit of that and, like, music equipment and, like, things to build a camp and tent and, like, these four vans. And we drove across basically into Mexico. And I remember getting stopped in the border. And they're like, what are you guys? And we're like, oh, we're missionaries. You know, we belong to Team Mania Ministries. And, yeah, like, the Duana are basically, like, the officers were like, we're not letting you in. What if you have drugs in these vans?
Right.
So... nobody really spoke Spanish. So they're like, Luis, can you go negotiate with this official or, like, this officer and tell him this is, like, you know, what we do? And they had to, like, open the boxes, see all the equipment. Then I had a call basically back to our offices and tell them, hey, we need a document. And I'm like, I don't know about this. I don't know how to, like, you know, logistically, like, what it takes to take, like, all this equipment, this organization that we're going to be there for a month in another country. This is, like, my first time just, like, dealing with it. So I had to call and be like, can you itemize everything that we have? Because they're going to charge us taxes on it, whatever we're bringing into on equipment and stuff like that. And I remember, like, thinking in my head, I'm like, what the heck am I doing? Like, is this even legal? Like,
right.
I'm, like, translating all these documents. and like calling and like talking to these officials in Mexico. Obviously, at that time, I thought it was cool. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like freaking negotiating with like, you know, these old soldiers to let us go in with all this different. It's going to be a cool story to tell them. But like now that I'm like thinking about it, I was just like, what's going on? Like eventually.
Yeah.
So my uncle, he's a cop there. So I had to call him and he actually showed up to the border and he told them, no, like, you know, they're missionaries. I don't know what he said, but they eventually let us through. But we were on hold there for like 5-6 hours. They wouldn't let us in. They wouldn't let us in with their equipment and like, you know, all this mission gear, all this stuff that we're going to prep camp for, you know, all these missionaries coming into Baja. So.
And after that, were you like, I'm done with this shit?
Oh, yeah. I still have some friends that I keep in touch with, and we talk about it, and like most of them, there's a couple of them that just kind of went their own way, and they're not, you know, they're not practicing any religion, they're just doing their thing. And then there's other people that are like, I see on Facebook, so they pop up and I'm like, who the heck is this guy? I need to unfollow him. He's like a pastor, or he's like, he has like this nonprofit, super conservative. I'm like, oh, delete. Like, I don't want to. So, most of the time, I'm not really active on social media. But yeah, like anytime there's like, oh, shared memory of like Team Mania or something. And ooh. I'm like, get me the heck out of here.
I don't want that memory. Yeah, don't remind me.
Exactly.
Wow.
So it was like, it kind of functioned, it sounds like, also as like a conversion camp too, if they're like making LGBTQ people,
yes,
like trying to pray the gay away or whatever and like torture them, essentially abuse them until they say that they're not gay anymore. Yes. Is that seems like that was a part of it
for me? Well, I didn't, like I said, I never saw it like them say it, like abuse somebody in that, but just the fact that they made someone wear a dress when I knew, like, weeks before, like, I kind of made, like, a connection with him of, like, him opening up a little bit about his sexuality. And I think he just felt, like, little, because I told him I'm from L.A. and I started naming, like, you know, all these bands. And I was, like, super, I was pretty honest with him. I was, like, man, you know, like, this. And we're into fashion. I was really kind of, like, into fashion. And he had a lot of, I don't know if, I used to wear a lot of, so one of my really good friends, you know, he belongs to the community and we used to go to American Apparel and he used to give me all that stuff. And then we started looking into American Apparel and he told me like what they stand for. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I could get behind it. So this guy, we made that connection over clothes and fashion. He's like, man, this is like my favorite brand. And he's like, I love, he was already like sporting like rainbow stuff. And he didn't really say rainbow, but like, so I kind of like made the connection. And I told, when I saw him in a dress and they made him like march with the cross, to me, I just put it worked together. I was like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
This is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think that qualifies as abuse. That's psychological abuse in my book. Like, oh, that's sure. humiliation and public shaming and like yes. trying to force someone's identity out of them in a through physical exertion too. Like, it's just all of those things, yeah, qualify, in my opinion, as forms of abuse.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then I guess my last question is just like, did you, I think that for someone who maybe doesn't understand how some of these dynamics work, they could be like, oh, well, they had the ability to leave. They knew it was a game on those, you know, the weekends where they were being chased by the government or whatever. Like, did it feel like a game though? Like,
it did for me. And I, like, the more I went about it, like, there was a lot of people, like I said, like, all my, like, the circle of friends that I belong to, their parents kind of paid out of pocket, or like, they just paid up front and they're like, we just can't afford, you know, to go back and be like, well, I got expelled from this, you know, you lost your money. For me, it was like a financial thing, like I said, and it was just like repairing a relationship with like my parents and like kind of, you know, just being like doing something, like accomplishing. And I'm like, the more I remember talking to people, people just had different things in their mind, like why they were doing it and why they kept going with it. You know, some people there, I remember saying, it's not safe for me. You go back home. Like one of my close friends, you know, his parents were going through a divorce. And he's like, I just don't want to, I'd rather be here in this game than really go back and like be in like, in a home that it's not like, you know, my parents are going through a divorce. Like, you know, I don't know what's going on. Like, I just don't want to be part and stuck in the middle of it. I just rather kind of stay out here.
I'm so glad that you were able to maintain that perspective through that experience, because, you know, when you kind of look up how other people took their experience at the Honor Academy, a lot, like, some people call it a cult, some people say they felt traumatized, and like, kudos for like finding your people and being able to, you know, not get sucked into the world, because I can imagine there, like, that might have been the experience for a number of people.
I'm gonna say it was definitely a cult. The fact, if you look at the definition, they were like, you know, in this place, a clue, like, from everybody. We had like our, basically, I remember, so there was this story. I was like, where is this, all this food coming from? Like, man, like, I saw cans and like sometimes the meats. We had this freezer, and I walk in the freezer and there was venison. Like, there was this deer like laying there, like they just basically killed it in the back of the woods, and like,
oh, somebody, man,
was gonna come and like, and like, after that, I remember for like 2 months I just ate PB&J. I was like, I'm not eating anything from here. It's either you had like two pieces of toast with like jelly or like a PB&J and like some fruit, or like you had whatever they made. And like, you know, it was basically like cafeteria food and stuff like that. But then, yeah, like, we had our own grounds and maintenance, like our own basically like generators outside. So it was like, and we were like confined. I remember, like, we weren't allowed to leave. Like, there was curfew as well throughout the whole internship, or, yeah.
Right. So it's not like going to college. It's like being a child going to summer camp, where you're you are fully, yeah, isolated, and you can't go anywhere,
yes,
or do anything.
And you have to come back. And there's guards and stuff. And if you break the rules, like, you get like, you know, 2-3 strikes and you're, you know, you're out. You get expelled if you keep like breaking curfew and stuff like that. Or they put you, there was like a plan, like a repairing plan, a probation plan. And like, you have to basically show that, you know, you want to stay here and like you're following, you're aligning with, you know, the rules or whatever.
Yeah, and I imagine I imagine the pressure of just like feeling shamed by your peers is a component as well. Like, you don't want to mess up because everyone will see and you'll be humiliated in front of them all.
Oh, yeah. That age is so crucial. Like, people, like, I remember sometimes I'm still figuring out who I am, you know, like, in that age,
yeah,
it's like so easily to get manipulated. Like, you don't even know you're getting manipulated, or like, you're
totally. You know, yeah, I mean, I think at most ages you don't, but especially when you're still, you know, you're figuring out who you are and,
oh, yeah,
what you want to do with your life.
There was people that you knew that they were like, kind of like, obviously in every circle and every, you know, the popularity, or like, they're like really, I was going to say, what's like the Instagram, when you're Instagram famous, that was like pre-Instagram, like people, influencers.
Like MySpace? Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, influencers. Like, there, right, was definitely people that were influencers, you know, and like, they would use that, and like, people would look up and be like, I want to be like him. He looks like a really good spiritual leader. Like, he has his shit put together, you know, like, or like, well, that's for me, the worship band, the team, like the people running the music program were influencers. I was like, wow, that's what I came here to do. I want to be on that stage. I want to be leading thousands of people, you know, into worship. But in the back of my mind, I just wanted to, like I said, I always wanted to be part of like the music industry. And to me, all I knew, I grew up in church for most of my life. So all I knew was worship music and how to perform in a church. I've been,
yeah,
employed by churches to play, you know? So obviously the more I got into it, I was like, well, I realized, I'm like, if I want to be a rock star, then I should play in a rock band. Why the fuck am I playing at a church? You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
stuff like that. And I still see, that's like my main thing when I see these people. I'm like, you know, you got to go to churches, or even in the Honor Academy, there was like laser beams, fog lights. And, you know, you have this whole experience of worship. I'm like, yeah, you're going to show. Like, if I want to experience fog lights and laser beams in my eyes, I'm just going to go to a show. Like, I'm not going,
right,
to go to church.
Yeah,
but it's all about,
yeah,
the experience.
Yeah, they're trying to make it cool, right?
Yeah,
they're trying,
cool,
to make it something that's enticing to the cool young people so they can continue to spread their message in quotation marks.
I'm gonna put myself, I was like, wow, I never knew like there was people like this out here. And I was part of it. Like, obviously, I had to, like, I told you, assimilate just to get by.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely, the only thing I'm going to say that it really kind of helped me is just to kind of be even more independent. Because that's the first time I broke away from my friends in California and like left home. And after that, I haven't been back. So it was like the first time of like independency, but it wasn't really because I knew my parents paid for it. So, but it was like the first disconnection of like, you know, especially with friend group, like, wow, leaving. And as much as I love them, like, I just, like I said, I left because I just, in the back of my mind, I wanted something new. Like, I was like, well, I'm here. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't go to school. I got kicked out. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not really another option. I'm working. But I just want something new. And this was like, well, this is kind of like my only option. Like, why not?
Yeah. I see the appeal of that. And I see, like, of course, there's value in that and in elements of different things that went on there, but it just seems like some of these youth camps or whatever, like, definitely took things too far. Oh, and if they didn't do that, it would be great.
Yeah. You know? Next level for sure. Yeah. Like, and the more I look back and I'm sharing my story, I'm just like, I see, you know, like you said, emotional abuse, physical abuse, trauma, traumatic stuff, like all this. And I'm like, man, I can't even imagine. Obviously, I had other experiences that kind of shaped me, and I was a little, I'm not going to say stronger, but like when I went there, like I felt like I was prepared, like I was like, well, I've experienced this. What could be worse than this? But if you're not, if you're somebody, I was going to say, if you're somebody that's really going genuinely, like, oh, I'm looking for an encounter with God, I'm trying to like find my faith, I think it was traumatic and scarring for sure. Like, this is what God means. Like, putting myself, you know.
Thank you so much for talking to us about your experience. Luis, thanks again. And I looks like you're doing well now. So that is we can ask for.
I went through a couple like counseling. I've talked to a little bit of this with my counselor, but like I said, it's just kind of, actually, the more I just read through stuff and like, you know, talk to people about emotional and physical abuse and like, sometimes I'll bring it up, but like, I know it's just wrong. Obviously, I've disconnected my whole religious connection, like, you know, with church, Christianity, all of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helped really like, close a chapter and be like, all right, this is wrong. Like, identify it. Like, I'm like, man, these people, they were just not who they say they were. Even like if they were trying to promote God, Jesus, whatever, I was like, that's not the right way
to do it.
I was like, in my opinion, that's not the right way to do it. So
agreed.
Wow.
All right, Megan.
Yes.
I think, would you join Honor Academy or Teen Mania Ministries?
Okay. I just realized while I was thinking about this that it would completely depend on if I was in a manic episode or not. So depressed Megan, no, couldn't do it. Manic Megan would love nothing more than to get up at 4 and do push-ups with a million other people for some bigger cause. So the name actually holds a little secret to my answer.
Megan Mania Industries.
Megan Mania
Manic Industries. Megan Ministry. I keep calling it industries. Do you have manic episodes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this about you.
Oh, yeah.
How have we gone 2 years of working together and I've never witnessed one?
Oh, I mean, you certainly have.
Really?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
Well, I guess you don't live with me, so it looks like nothing to you, but it just looks like 4 years worth of stuff being done in 2 hours and like really fast talking and doing everything all at once.
Okay, maybe I have, because there have been, I feel like most of the time we're like pretty chill, can take a long time to do things, both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while, you'll be like, what are we doing with this thing? How can I help with this thing? What's going on with this thing?
Let's do it. Yeah. And like, I'm so desperate to do it when I'm manic, because I know when I'm not, literally my brain is like, thunk, 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 thunk. I'm doing a really slow winding motion where it's just like nothing. I don't know. I shouldn't talk shit on my brain like that, but it's pretty frustrating.
I mean, that doesn't sound that bad. I've witnessed manic episodes in some people I know and some friends, and they get like full on paranoid and scary.
Yeah. I don't like try to have sex with people or like my friend has that kind of mania where she'll be like really way more sexually like open and all of that stuff. That's not my experience. I'm just like actually a human functioning.
I didn't know that a manic episode could just be a period where you're more energetic. I thought it was like, because I've only seen it be literally like, oh, they're like
they've like lost their minds kind of right
now. Yeah, I mean, sometimes people have really severe ones and they have to be hospitalized and whatever, but mine are pretty chill.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks.
I feel like I have that, but like every other day.
Oh, that's nice. That's great.
Where I'll be like, I can't fucking look at anyone or talk to anyone for days A. And for days B, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I have to get worked on. What's going on? What have I not done? You know?
Wow.
It's nice and, nice and balanced.
Our brains are really, really great places to be.
Listen, we're getting shit done. Okay. That's right.
Thank you for joining our brains again. We love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Remember to go leave a review if you've liked what you've heard.
If you don't like it, please don't leave a review.
Please don't.
It's not helpful.
You're too busy. Helping? It's hard to do it. You have to sign in.
It takes so much work.
Yeah, just do something else. But if you love it, please give us one. It means so much. And as always, remember to follow your gut, watch out for red flags, and never, ever trust me.
Trust me.
Boop.
Bye.